Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. My name is Doug Cunnington, and I have my buddy, producer Chris, joining me today. How are you doing?
Doing good, Doug. How are you doing?
Awesome. It's pretty fun. This is going to be the start of us doing some, I think, like, in air quotes, short form podcasts. Now, the hard part with two people, we're going to be gabbing and we're going to want to go on and on. And the thing is, the format of these shows, hopefully we're going to be under 30 minutes. That's the goal. We have a handful of topics. I think we have four of them, and we're going to try to stick to 8 minutes. So automatically the math doesn't work out. I hear myself talk, but we're going to do our best to go fast. And I think it's fun because a lot of these topics, they could actually be like longer episodes, but we're going to try to keep it tight. Now, before we go on, I've mentioned you, Chris, as the producer. Chris, if people have gone to some Phi events like Economy or otherwise, then they may have met you. They might know you already. But just as a quick intro, like, what's your story? How did you end up helping me? Any other like broad things you want to share with people just so they get to know you a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, nothing too exciting here. Was working about 20 years as an engineer. Thought that, okay, this isn't for me. So got into the FIRE movement. Luckily, I think it was right before I ended up leaving my job. I was always a big listener of this podcast. And coincidentally, Doug, I think you had sent out an email to the email list looking for a producer. Thought, okay, yeah, I need something to do. So yeah, I'll give it a try. And we got in touch, started helping out with that.
You're the most overqualified podcast engineer, and I appreciate all your help. And I'm glad you're going to be joining me on a couple of these episodes, and we're just going to jump into it. Now, the fun part is if you're watching on YouTube, you're going to see a timer that I'm going to put up here because we are indeed going to try to stick to just 8 minutes or so per answer. And we're going to fail at this. I actually already know that. But we'll do our best. It'll keep us a little bit tighter. And if you're listening, we're not going to have a buzzer going off, but basically I'll try to keep us moving here. Now, we're going to hit, I think, four topics. One of them is around happiness and income. So there's a few studies out there. I'm still pondering this, and I think it's going to be something I think about a lot. We'll talk about toys and spending. I have been buying guitars and actually like just been spending a little bit more money recently. We'll also talk about inflection points in our lives, which, I mean, those could be like full on memoirs and stuff. We also have something about my thoughts on Elizabeth's retirement. So those are the main four things we're going to get into. And I'll kick it off with this happiness and income study. So I have been pondering this. This topic is going to come up in some other episodes, but many of us probably remember the 2010 study by Daniel Kahneman that it appeared to show that income was strongly correlated with happiness at lower income levels, but about 75,000 is where it leveled off and it didn't really have much of an impact on happiness. And I remember so many of us, especially when we're frugal, we're like, yeah, I'm happy. 75,000 is all I need. And then, I think I internalized it a little bit, but then in 2021, another study by Matthew Killingsworth at Wharton kind of had a contradictory conclusion, and it was based on smartphone-based happiness tracking. So I'll actually link up to the original studies so that you could go check them out as well. But basically, this other study showed that you could be happier at higher income levels. So like 150, 250, 500. And what happened was Kahneman and Killingsworth, they worked together on a new study, and basically, it showed that I think Kahneman's original study kind of looked at the lower end, and then Killingsworth looked at the higher end. And I'm still pondering this because I feel like more money can make you a little bit happier if you're using it in air quotes, right way. So I think everyone's mileage is going to vary a little bit, but I kind of viewed it as like a scarcity versus abundance mindset, where like if you can figure out ways to use money to make you happier, then that can actually work. And it's not obviously, you know, it's not buying guitars. Like, that doesn't make me happy. But if I get a guitar and then I could play music with my friend Tyler, he plays drums, that's good. Like, that's a way to use the money to spend time with people, which I think can make you happy. You could extend this to renting a house and then inviting a bunch of friends to come over and you hang out in the mountains or whatever. So I'm still pondering this. There's ups and downs and everyone's different, but I'm curious, Chris, like, what do you take away from a study like this?
I think along the same lines as you, Doug. I've not read the original Kahneman study, but I've heard about it, heard it referenced many times, and it makes sense to me. And I think just based on my own experience too, your thoughts on maybe it's abundance versus scarcity mindset. I think I see that in my own life. I know a lot of people who, whether they have a lot of money, a little bit of money, their life's not going to change. They're kind of already set in their habits. Maybe they're very frugal. They like to do simple things, just kind of sit around the house, hang out with friends. And no matter how much money they end up getting, they're not going to change. But I also see other people who maybe if they do get more money, maybe an extra $10,000, they're going to use that. They're going to do bigger trips. They're going to buy more things. They're going to be happier. So I think it all just depends on the person. And it's hard to have just one study that kind of overall has a, I guess, the specific conclusion.
Yeah, totally. And it's like people change too, because I could think back when I was 25 or whatever, and I had a different outlook and I had different goals and I spent time in a different way and I had different hobbies and stuff. So like things could like dramatically shift and you could probably drift in one direction or another. Or it could be, you know, thinking of die with zero and time bucketing and like, you know, doing the activities at the right time in your life. So like right now, in my mid 40s, I'm pretty healthy. I'm in shape. I could probably do like more adventurous kind of things just in general. But when I'm like 75, I mean, I'm probably not going to be as able to do certain things that are just like more physically demanding. So like knowing that and knowing like when you can and should, you know, maybe spend money, that could be really important. And then, you know, I guess if you're on the lower end, $10,000, like if you're making $25,000, $10,000 more is like fucking dramatic, right? But it's like if you're making $180,000, $10,000 is like not, like it's not going to move you to any other like happiness level. Like you're roughly doing the same thing. It's obviously just a much smaller amount. So definitely a lot to unpack here. So I think, I mean, I actually have, three episodes that I think you have listened to, Chris. Carl and I recorded these like last summer in 2024. We're doing a happiness series and then like busyness happened and we weren't able to finish it up. So I have at least a couple more episodes plus like this information, which kind of like turns a lot of stuff upside down. Or it's like there's a section where we want to talk about community and turns out you don't need money to have good community and you get a lot of happiness and fulfillment from the relationships that you have. So with that in mind, like you can, you know, you can make things less important or more important depending on like what aspect of happiness you're looking at. So any other thoughts on this studies?
I think just in general, happiness is so complicated. You think it would be easy. It's just finding things that light you up and that's it, right? But no, it's like you're saying, with all these studies, there's all these variables, there's all these complications, and it's really personal too. And everyone just needs to find kind of what makes them happy, and it's not a one size fits all, whether that's associated with money or associated with anything else. So it's just, yeah, it's a tough topic. So I think I did listen to those episodes with you and Carl last year, and I know you're going to have a couple more coming up. So I think for everyone, it's going to be good to kind of listen to all those, probably at least a 3-part series right now, and just kind of get everyone's thoughts on how they interpret happiness on their own.
And yeah, the goal will be to have the whole series done and then release them out there. So at some point, we're going to get to those. And we're coming up on the end of 8 minutes, so we're doing pretty well so far. So here's another one that you suggested. It's about inflection point. So it could be financial or not. So are there one or two events that really shaped who you are?
I think financially speaking, there is one event that really sticks out to me. Growing up, I knew I kind of didn't want to work forever, but I didn't know what to make of that. My parents both worked until traditional retirement age. Everyone around me did that. Everyone went to college, got a job. That's what was expected. But fortunately, a couple years later, when I started my career, I overheard some other coworkers talking about the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad and some of the concepts in there. And that kind of caught my ear. I thought, hey, I should check this out. And so I picked up a copy, read through it, and just kind of latched on to some of the ideas in there about kind of having your money work for you. And of course, that led me down the rabbit hole of just personal finance and investing, and kind of got a jump start there on, okay, just save. And then hopefully one day in the future, I'm not going to be beholden to a job. So that kind of changed my life right there.
Very cool. And when you were younger, like how old were you when you were like, I don't think I'm going to work my whole life? A little kid?
Little-ish. It was probably maybe junior high or high school.
Okay.
I was working at a barbecue restaurant and thought, this is fun for now, but I don't want to do this forever.
Gotcha. You're like, damn, this is hard work. And I'm like, barbecue is pretty good. I would not be now. I'm like, maybe I go back to barbecue. You know, that sounds fun to me, but, it is hard work. It is hard work overall. I think I was somewhat similar, as far as like not wanting to work, but it wasn't as distinct as you described. Cause like, I know, like I cut grass and I did like other lawn care stuff. And I think I knew I liked working for myself. So some of my friends worked at the grocery store, the barbecue restaurant or whatever. But I was like, I don't want to do that. I'm making so much more like cutting grass myself, and I don't have to put up with any crap from anyone else. So I think I knew that, but then I forgot about it as like went to school, kind of good at math, people push you into engineering, and then, you know, it's fine. Like I was fine with numbers, but it turns out I didn't really love the stuff. So, well, and I'll jump to my inflection point. So there are two main ones that I'll highlight. One was in 2013. I was kind of burned out on like listening to podcasts about beer brewing. And I was super into homebrewing beer and judging. And I was like, I would listen to whatever, 20 hours a week of like brewing podcast. Really loved it, but I got burned out. And I was like, I'm going to try to find a new podcast. And I found Smart Passive Income. And I was just browsing. I was not interested in side hustles. I wasn't interested in entrepreneurship, but I was like, that sounds interesting. I'll check that out. And then I got hooked. That sent me on like an obsession where I was interested in building websites and SEO. And I was able to like earn money on the side. I thought it would be great if I could earn like $300 on the side. But within like 6 months, I was making like thousands of dollars, and it completely changed like what I thought I could do. 2 years after that, I got laid off because of the second inflection point. And that's when my wife and I decided that we could live anywhere. And we were like slow traveling a little bit, like kind of testing it out. We worked remotely and we were like, we can move from Atlanta. So why don't we head out west? So we ended up in Montana where we were visiting for about 3 months. And we ended up staying in Bozeman for a few years. And then we moved down here to Longmont after that. But basically like just making the big decision to like put our stuff in storage, sell the condo and like hit the road. Technically, I think we were like digital nomad types, but we didn't identify that way. I think for some reason we were proud that we had like you know, normal corporate jobs that we, you know, could do remotely. But as soon as I moved, this was like my fuck you money point, by the way. This could be a whole episode. Basically, we were doing pretty well. I was earning money on the side and we moved. And then I called my boss and I was like, hey, we moved. My wife got a job, so would love to work it out. And they said, ah, I think we can. But then like 2 weeks later, they laid me off. So it was on the front end of like a bunch of layoffs. So it wasn't directly because I moved, but it was because I moved. And that was cool. Now looking back, it was just like, here's your options. And it turned out great. I was happy to be laid off because I was like, now I don't have to have the balls to quit. I could just get laid off. And then I had a chance to do my own business and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. I think that highlights the point too. I think a lot of these inflection points, both of us have these same stories. It's, you never know where it's going to come from. You know, we weren't expecting, I wasn't expecting to have someone bring up rich dad, poor dad. You weren't really expecting to get laid off, but just, you know, it happened, it changed our life, and it's just kind of weird to think about what would have happened otherwise. But I think we're very fortunate to have these chance events.
When you picked up the book, and when you were hearing about the concepts and stuff, did you know that it was going to change the way you thought about money and lifestyle and stuff?
No, not at all. And I think I'd heard some conversations around the office and just thought, oh, you can make money. It was probably, you know, mostly focused on real estate, but it was just opening my mind to there's other ways to make money versus being a W-2 employee. So that's what really blew my mind. You know, I think in the book he talks about, you know, a lot of real estate, but also I think he had like a Velcro wallet business. So there's just so many things out there, and just, I don't know, just open my eyes to different opportunities out there. Mm.
Got it. Very cool. Yeah, we can go on and on about this, and I'm sure there's other inflection points. But in the spirit of making sure we're hitting our time, we're doing pretty damn good, though. I got to tell you. So before we go on, no sponsor for these like short bonus episodes so far. So number one, if you have a company and you want to sponsor these, let me know. Also, you can help out the show in a couple ways. One, you could leave a review out there on like Apple Podcasts is really good. Spotify is fine. The other thing, there's a Buy Me a Coffee out there where you can become a monthly member. There's a little extra content out there. I'm trying to do a better job giving like sneak peeks and other basically benefits if you're supporting the show. So it does help out. It does cost money for us to do the show. And also, Chris, I've mentioned this a couple times on some other, I think, emails, maybe other shows, but like you've been doing this for free, which is fantastic. I really appreciate you doing that. But one thing I want to do is give you the Buy Me a Coffee money. And that should happen if we're able to get another sponsor. And we just want to like break even-ish. I got stickers if people want stickers too. If you see me at a live event, I should have stickers, even these collector ones with you know, me and Carl on there before he split. So as we move on to the next topic here, let's go to toys and spending. So I have been getting guitars, and I'll tell you a little bit about it. I'm curious your thoughts and then some of the toys that you have. So in 2021, I was like, I think I maybe should get a nicer guitar. I'm not that good, but I like to play and it's pretty fun. And I went and I got a Gibson LG2. It's really cool. I love it. And it kind of set me on this path to actually like get more guitars that are like fairly expensive. So like a Gibson LG2 is like, the list is maybe like $2,600. So it's like a pretty decent chunk of money. And it was a big thing, and I was like very nervous to do it, but it made me very happy. So as I've gone on, I've actually purchased more used guitars. the good thing when you buy a used guitar is it's like a car. Like, it depreciates very quickly most of the time. Depends on the specifics, but most of the time it does decline in value fairly quickly. If you get a relatively good deal, like from Craigslist or like Facebook Marketplace, then you'll be able to potentially like buy the guitar at an okay price. You could have fun with it. You could play it. You use it. And then you're able, usually, if you want to resell it again. And if you got a relatively good deal, you shouldn't lose money, or it's fairly minor. So I have only traded for another guitar, and I think I got a pretty good deal. So I had this old, like 1930s pre-war guitar, and I had fun with it for about a year. And then I wanted to get a different like National Resonator, and a guy was open for a trade, and I was looking for exactly what he had. He was looking for exactly what I had. So we just traded straight up. So at this point, I've like leveled up. Now, right now, I actually have a Martin 0015 for sale on Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace. Now, the cool part, I got a great deal on it because it was kind of dirty, and I cleaned it up, and I got probably like 50% off when I bought it. And I'm going to be able to, you know, make some money on it. And I want to get a new guitar. So I've been having fun doing this. So number one, Chris, if you have any questions for me, let me know around the guitar. And then if not, then I'm curious what toys or other things you're spending money on these days.
Okay. So I actually have a twist. Maybe it's not a twist, but it's exploring more of what you're doing here. So what's your motivation for all this? Is it maybe to try to increase happiness? Is it the thrill of maybe finding a good deal that you could perhaps flip and maybe make some money off of it? Is it more motivation, knowing that if you have a nicer guitar, it'll help you, I guess, help motivate you to play more? So kind of what's with this? Like, what's the motivation behind doing all this?
Great question. One is around the process. So I think at the root of this is me watching YouTube videos where people have gear and they're like reviewing different gear. So like, I am made aware of things that I did not know before. And I'm like, that's kind of cool. The good part is I'm kind of learning something, right? And I'm also happy about the process of like researching the gear and then looking and then seeing like, oh, I have heard of that. And oh, this one's a little bit underpriced for what I think, or I think I'm just going to have fun. Now, I don't think I get like greater motivation from having a different guitar, because like I actually have purchased several over the last couple of years now. So it's like I have more than what I could play. And because I've leveled up like the quality of the gear, they're all really fucking nice. So like I have more than I could actually play, and they're really nice to play, and I feel good about having them and all that kind of stuff. So overall, I think it's the hunt, a little bit of the negotiating, and I just find that fun. I can see after I do this a little while that like I'll be like, ah, it's not as fun anymore, and I have like the guitars that I want and they're really nice. But the cool part is like I'm able to like level up as I'm getting a good deal and then negotiating well in the future. So it's just fun to have this stuff, I think.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I've always been a big Craigslist person, Facebook Marketplace. I used to play guitar. I haven't done it for a while, but same thing. Probably about a decade ago, it was just, okay, I want to try maybe a Gibson. Okay, I've had that for a while. I can resell it. I want to try a Fender Strat or a Fender Mustang, something like that. And just kind of being able to try things, trade them. And the coolest part was just retaining the value. So for the financial side of it, that was always kind of a good thing there.
Yep. And I think, you know, testing it out, and that's the thing, it's like test it out for a little while. And then I'm like, okay, like that was fun, but I'm I'm okay to let it go. I'm not like attached to it emotionally or anything. There are a couple that I probably won't do that with. Things could always change, but like there's a guitar that I got on my birthday a couple years ago when we were down in Santa Fe, and it's a National Resophonic. It's a mahogany body, and yeah, it's just has a cool vibe, and I really like that guitar. And I bought it brand new, and it was on my birthday, so a little bit special around that. So I'm curious, any other kind of toys or spending in the last couple of years for you?
No, I have kids, so no. Now, I think on a serious note, it's more towards experiences and just as you and Carl have been talking about on this show, it's just Die with Zero hit me as well. And it's just realizing that, okay, there's, you know, spending is good. It's not necessarily bad, but if you have specific experiences you want to have with your family and friends, you know, it's tough sometimes, but at the end of the day, I think it's worth it. And so just a lot of the spending in the past couple of years we've been doing as a family is just taking those trips, going to concerts, making those memories. So that's kind of where I've increased my spending recently. And looking back on it, yeah, there were times where it's tough to spend. You know, I'm a frugal guy. We'll talk about in the sound check some of the stupid habits I have, but it's hard to get over. It's kind of ingrained in me, but I kind of want to force myself to get out there, make these memories, because I know looking back on it, that they're going to be worth it. And so that's kind of where my spending's been recently.
Yep. 100%. I'm trying to think of ways to do it, and actually leaning back on the happiness topic. It's like if you could come up with ways to spend money so that you could spend time with your family and friends and that sort of thing, like that's going to pay off more than me buying another guitar. There will be a point where it's like diminishing returns and that sort of thing, or, you know, like Fight Club, the stuff you own ends up owning you. So I don't want to end up in a situation where I'm just like, I can't do stuff because I have like too many whatever, like physical things around here. And I mean, I'm not like a really superficial person as far as like things that you buy. It's just like this guitar habit has been fun, and I can exercise my mind by learning music and the coordination and like trying to play stuff. And then, like as I mentioned, shout out to Tyler, been playing some music with him, and that's been cool because I'm not that great of a guitar player. I don't know how good of a drummer he is. He could be fine, but he doesn't complain about how bad I am. We just like play really loud. And it's fucking awesome. It's so fun. Side note, I got a new amp because like to play with a drummer, like you need like a pretty loud amp. So I went to Craigslist, found a nice, it's a Fender Blues Junior. And normally they're like $800, $850, but I found one used. I'm a haggler too, you know, so they were asking like maybe $450 or $500, and I think I got it for like $360. I mean, it's I'm pretty sure I'll be able to sell it for more than what I bought it for, and I'll be able to use it for years. I mean, it's like mint condition. I don't even, it's like I went to Guitar Center and just bought it. Like there's no signs of wear or anything like that. And it's so loud. It's fun. It's fun to crank it up. Did you get to do any of that when you play guitar?
Yeah, I did. Right. I was into amps too, some tube amps, and yeah. I only played a couple shows with some friends, but it's always fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So the big question now is, do you two have a band name, and when is your debut going to be? When do we get to hear this?
We don't have a name yet, but
That's the first thing, man.
Unclear. Yeah, I think Elizabeth was like, hey, why are you getting an amp? And I'm like, how am I going to be in a band if I don't have an amp, you know? Like, am I just going to like plug it into the computer or whatever? So anyway, all right. We went a little longer on that one, but I think it was worth it there. So Tyler and I will work on a name. One thing I have all this like recording equipment and stuff. So like I did bring in just my audio recorder. So there's some stuff of us playing, so I could actually try to pull some of it out. I think some of it's okay, but like, I don't know. we're having a good time, but it's pretty cool. So let's wrap that. And let's see, you have this one. So why don't you read this one out? And then we'll go from there on Elizabeth's retirement.
Yeah. So specifically, this is a selfish question, but I bet a lot of the listeners have the same thoughts. We've heard from Elizabeth. We had the original show where she announced her retirement. There was the follow-up, I think it was 1 month later with Dusty. And I know you have a new episode coming out soon talking about maybe a, you know, 6 month update. But this is all from her perspective, kind of her thoughts on how early retirement's going, what she's doing. But what are your thoughts, Doug? You know, are there any lessons learned that you could pick up? Is there anything that she's doing that maybe you would do differently when you actually pull the plug and retire? Or, you know, just kind of what are your thoughts?
Mm. Yeah, this could be a longer situation. So I'll think about it, and I'll probably make some notes on this after we finish talking, because I think this could be pretty good. So number one, I am absolutely thrilled that she stopped working. In multiple episodes, I think I've said, she will say, I'm so glad that I'm not working. I'm so much happier now. And it's 100% like clear to me. She's way happier than she was. And she doesn't listen to the show, but some of her friends do listen to the show. So I will ask you, friends, you know, don't tell her I said this. Okay. So we have this understanding now. But like some people, they don't like any of the jobs that they have and they don't like working. And I think she might be a person who basically doesn't like any job that she's had. I think she could probably be a pretty good like solo operator if she was calling her own shots. Maybe more like of an entrepreneur. However, she doesn't have the entrepreneurship like mindset with all the uncertainty that you have to deal with, and you have to make the calls and decisions, and you have a million unknowns. But overall, like, she's way happier, because I think all the jobs that she had since I've known her, she has not liked. There could be like little pieces that she does enjoy, but it's very small. And as far as like lessons that I've learned, I think actually I won't necessarily apply this to myself because my work is different and my mindset is different, but I think she could have quit sooner. Now, we don't know what the market was going to do, and it's been very good the last, like, I mean, I was going to say like 5 years, but really it's been like 10 or 12 years or something like that. We've had a lot of good years here. But I think she probably could have stopped working a little bit sooner. And, you know, that one more year syndrome that keeps like resetting, like that's a thing. And we definitely had that. Although I have a different outlook, a more optimistic view of like what the possibilities could be. So the way, I mean, we're in a great spot now, but it was definitely, you know, towards the tail end of her quitting, I was like, you have the green light to quit. So like, if you're sticking around, I don't want to hear about the bad stuff that they're doing at the company, because like, you're choosing to do it now. That didn't fly very well, by the way. People should take a different approach on that. Now, as far, I'm going to make sure I understand the question too. Like, so you're asking like, what'll happen when I quit?
Yeah. Do you have any lessons that you see from her that you could apply to when you quit?
I'll have to think a little bit more about that. So the weird thing is I've been quiet quitting on myself for the last 5 years. And basically I've like exited certain pieces of my other business. And in the last year and a half, I like sunset my courses and stopped promoting stuff. So like the level of my responsibilities have dropped dramatically. And anything that I'm doing is because I want to do it, aside from like, there's always whatever, like 15% of like bullshit admin that you don't want to do. But you have to, like taxes and bookkeeping and stuff like that. So I don't think I'll pick up many things because I'm self-employed. And if I like keep at this sort of level that I'm doing stuff right now, which is roughly like, I don't know, 5 to 10 hours a week, that's pretty good. I may, you know, get the itch to do something new. Like I've thought, I haven't told you, Chris, I haven't even talked to Carl, but I need to ping him. I was like, what if I take what we have for the lazy book and I finish it off? Like, that's kind of cool. I like long-term projects like that. So I don't think I've learned anything specific, but my work is so different and I've been self-employed for like 10 years now. So it's like, I'm so far in like some other weird direction. And she was like going to the office and she had like politics with different teams and other stuff like that. And I just don't have to deal with that. So it's a totally different thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. It sounds like just the way your work is set up, it's just a different environment. And it sounds like she has a different personality as well. So just, it's kind of good though to hear, you know, different perspectives, you know, even married couples, they all have their different things they got to work with and deal with and all that. So.
Yeah. And like, you know, like you said, the personalities are different. I'm very chill and usually don't get worked up and like just very, to be redundant, just calm and chill. But she has a little more anxiety and like is a little bit more of a planner and more of a maximizer overall, which it's a good match. Cause like if two people were just like too chill and like apathetic, that doesn't work out well. And if two people are like too stressed out and trying to control everything, that doesn't work either. Well, and I'm curious, like you have been retired, I think about what, like 10 months or something like that as well?
Almost about a year and a half or so.
Dang. So how's it going for you? Any observations from your own experience?
It's going good. And I think listening to Elizabeth's episodes in the past, I see a lot of myself and her. I'm a worrier. I have a lot of anxiety about the future, like to really plan ahead. And so it was nice to see that there's other people going through the same, I guess, through the same situation as I am. I guess the big thing, which is really weird, which has come up, is I actually probably worry about money or think about money way more now than I ever did when I was working. And I think it's because in the past, it was always, you know, I'm a career W-2 employee, so always had that steady paycheck coming in. And that's what I got used to after 20 years. And then also having a steady schedule, you know, work dictates that for me. I got meetings on these days. I got to be in the office, you know, 9 to 5, 4 days a week. But just having more of the unknown now, it's kind of scary, you know, thinking about different drawdown strategies and just psychologically, you know, how do I structure my time? It's just all these things. And it's just worrying more about money now than I ever did before, knowing that I'm going to be okay. So it's all in my head. It's just a real struggle to get through. So just, I think it'd be fun, you know, to meet Elizabeth one day and kind of talk through some of these different challenges and kind of, we could probably laugh about it and say, yeah, we're going through the same things, or maybe give each other advice. You know, here's how I handle this. And we could be our own little support group, you know?
I was going to say, yeah. I should just like have you guys exchange numbers. You could text back and forth. Yeah, I was going to say your voice sounds so calm. Like you don't sound like you're anxious at all, but yeah, you sound very chill.
It's my, you know, tough exterior.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because I think there certainly was a stretch where Elizabeth was thinking about money more, and the, you know, interesting thing is like probably both of us are like at our most wealthy that we've ever been because we're, you know, we oversaved a little bit, the market's been up, you're probably, and I realize, and I think you do too, Chris, we're self-aware. This is a weird fucking problem, but it's just like, we're looking and we're like, we were under budget and we're literally like, what if we eat out more? Which is like the opposite of what most people are doing. They're like, don't eat out so much, it's expensive. And we're like, maybe we could help local businesses by eating out more and we don't have to do dishes. And even though it's a little, you know, less healthy usually, we're like, maybe we'll eat out more. Again, weird problem. Usually the opposite advice that you might hear from, you know, financial podcast or whatever. So yeah, very interesting. Well, this has been very fun, Chris. We generally failed at what we were trying to do. It's been about 41 minutes, plus we got the sound check, but we're going to make this tighter. And, you know, to the point earlier, like how my work is, I was like, I have more thoughts in my head and I want to talk to people about it. And I was like, Chris, maybe we could record these like one-off bonus episodes occasionally and see what happens. So I had a blast. Thank you for joining me today. Do you have a blog? Do you want to tell people where they could find it?
Yeah. So I have a blog with a friend called Epic Financial Journey. And it's just two of us talking about personal finance, financial independence, and just giving our own thoughts. So we'd like you to come over, come hang out with us, check it out.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we'll wrap it up here and stick around for the sound check that's coming up later. And I haven't told you this yet, Chris, but I recorded a little like a buffer jingle on the guitar. So when people hear the guitar on there, that's me playing. So be nice. I'm doing my best. But I was like, yeah, for these episodes, I'll record my own little soundtrack. So, well, Chris, this has been really fun. We'll talk to you soon.
Catch you later.
All right. So I think things are working here. Yep. So Chris, you had a great idea for a discussion topic. And what are some of the ridiculous frugal habits that we have? Both of us are doing well financially, but there's some things that we do out of habit or don't even move the needle. So what do you do? What are some of your silly things?
I have a couple things. I'll go to the grocery store and I'll look at buying things based on lowest per unit cost. It's usually generic items or whatever's on sale, but I'll look at that tag and it's got to be the best price per pound or price per ounce, not based on what I want to buy. So it's just a habit I've had forever. I'll similarly go to a restaurant and I'll look for low priced items on the menu. I won't get what I want, like the steak or the special. It's just, okay, this burger or this chicken, it's happy hour. That's what I'm getting.
Oh, I was about to say I've gotten over that one, but I haven't, because like we've been looking at like happy hour places and we've been going to them. That said, I have gotten over like getting the steak that I want or whatever thing on the menu. I'm pretty good on that now, but I 100% go for the unit price stuff. I'll look. Sometimes I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter. I don't need to get like whatever the giant, huge economy size thing. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to eat all this stuff. So I do look, and sometimes I will make decisions that way. Big thing at the grocery store for me is the meat that's going to expire. So it's marked down. I love that stuff. Cause I'm like, I'm going to cook it today. It's all good. It's not like they sell rotten meat or whatever. So I get that all the time. Love that stuff. What else do you have? What else do you do?
I go to different events, you know, different fairs or sporting events. And I always walk by different booths and I always pick up the free items. You know, there are these cheap headphones, there are air fresheners, chapstick. And for some reason, it's free and I just pick it up. I mean, it makes no sense. I have a pile of all this in my room for the past decade or two, and it's just sitting there. I never use it. I never throw it away because I think someday I'm going to use this.
So one, I do that a little bit, but I have gotten better because some of it's just like cheap crap. And I'm like, I know this is like no good. I'm not going to use this. But one that you have written here that I love, and I do this too. You take toiletries home from hotels, and I get the shampoo and the conditioner. I'm bald. I'm like, why do I get that? But it's for the guest room. All right. It's for the guest room. We put it over there. There's like a practical use for it, but it is kind of funny. Like I'll snatch that stuff. Now I stopped doing this, but back in the day I used to bring, like the little, coffee, single serve coffee grounds or whatever. I would take those from hotels. Now this was like 20 years ago, so I was a little poorer then. But yeah, I would take those home and like just, you know, every day I would snatch them, and then they would come in and clean the hotel room each day. It was back when they cleaned hotels every single day. And then I would get another one. So I'd come home with like five of them. Kind of silly. What else do you take from the hotels?
I've started doing it recently, but toilet paper. And it's only because we have a dog and he's pretty messy. So I like to use that for wiping him up. So it's practical.
Gotcha.
At least I like, justify it to myself. You know.
I was like, dude, the hotel toilet paper is not great. Like, you should upgrade your toilet paper. Spend the money on that. Not bad. All right. Yeah, I have a couple other little habits. And the thing is, like, I don't think I notice them so much. And to your point, it's like, it's kind of a habit. And then you see yourself doing it and you're like, what am I doing? One thing I've eliminated is like trying to squeeze the last bit of toothpaste out of the toothpaste roll, or like cutting it open. I think I got to a point where I was like cutting it open, getting everything out of there. Now, what do you do with the end of the toothpaste roll?
Same thing. I don't cut it, but I'll just squeeze every last bit that I can. And just when I think it's done, it's not done. You can get a little bit more. You can always do that. So I hear you.
Yeah. Well, no, I've gotten over that one. So I'm like, I try to get the last little bit. And then I'm like, fuck it, just throw it away. So, and then I'm sure, I don't know. I think like a turtle chokes on it or something like that. Like all the trash that we create is, it's pretty awful, but it's a weird note to end on. But anyway, it's pretty good for sound check, I guess.